trying to get people who didn't report to me to give me something that I needed in order to make the deadline. It's like trying to herd cats.
Hey, it's Nate DeSaro, and welcome to Titans of Industry, the podcast where I talk to industry leaders and innovators who are at the top of their game and leading the pack in their fields, uncovering some of the best stories in today's business landscape. In this episode, I sit down with Mary Elizabeth Davis, the former managing editor of Southern Living Magazine, who is currently the director of creative services for one of the most notable marketing and communications firms based in Nashville, Tennessee. Mary Elizabeth talks us through her journey to landing her dream job as the editor of one of the most popular magazines in the country, why she pivoted to use her storytelling skills for brands all over the nation, and how she learned what it means to rule with a velvet hammer. And now let's get to the episode. But before we do, it's important to know that whether you're a small business owner or the face of a multi-billion dollar industry, your organization has a great story to tell, and Content Titan wants to help you tell it. We are a digital content creation powerhouse built for the 21st century, providing all-in creative, strategic, production, post-production, and distribution services for a 360-degree, 24/7 world. In our world, Titans are passionate, creative doers. They have the experience to take your project from start to finish, minimizing your involvement so you can focus on what matters most, running your business. So if you're ready to take your content strategy and production to the next level, our Titans are ready to help. Now here's my conversation with Mary Elizabeth Davis. Well, Mary Elizabeth, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast with us. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about your time at Southern Living, and then now here in Nashville as the Director of Creative Services for quite the agency.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right in. Talk to me about how you got into this business of Southern Living Magazine.
Oh gosh, okay. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. This is really fun. So I got into the business of Southern Living because I went to school for graphic design. And in Mobile, Alabama, small school, Spring Hill College. And then came back from like on Christmas break, and my parents, my dad is an entrepreneur, small business owner, and my parents have always been very career driven. My mom didn't work, but my dad always did. And they're always like pressuring us into like, all right, so what's your plan? You know? And so I came home one Christmas break. I think it was after my during my senior year, and there's like, you know, you think you're going to go home and have like a relaxing Christmas break. No, not at the McGinn household. Like you're going to go home and you're probably going to work a little bit, and then you're going to figure out what your plan is for after school, which is great because I'd had a couple internships and like, I had a feeling, but like, I wasn't ready to, you know, dive right into that. But anyway, so I was sitting there at the kitchen counter, like Googling internships, knew I needed a graphic design internship. And I look over and there's a Southern Living on the kitchen island, and I'm like, I don't know, that'd be cool. Like, I was like very naive, obviously, and very brave, and thought very highly of myself. I was like looking at the milk agencies, and I mean, like, I don't know who I thought it was, like, which is a beautiful thing to be naive and really brave. But so I Googled it, and I'm like, oh wow, they have an internship program. And so I applied for the internship, got the interview, which was very exciting. And I like went in, I think I interviewed for three or four jobs that day. I drove up from Mobile to Birmingham, interviewed for three or four. I mean, I was a nervous wreck driving up there because I like pulled over into a rest stop, changed into my interview outfit, went and interviewed, and then drove back that day, which I thought I was like big shit, you know, like said to this college student going and interviewing, like that just sounded so real life. So then ends up, I got the internship at Southern Living, which was very cool. It was in the production department, which I didn't know what in the world that was. And started like right after school. It's a 6-month internship, and I moved to Birmingham with the idea that I would be there for 6 months. So like my parents moved me in, I got a futon, like very temporary situation. Started my internship, and which I should say that the reason I got that internship, I asked when I got there, like, hey, do you have any feedback on my interview? Is there anything I could have done differently or better for the future? Which I think is good advice that my dad gave me, to always ask what you could have done differently or better, especially in the beginning of your career. And the reason that I got, I was like neck and neck with some other girl. And the reason I got the internship was because I wrote a thank you note. And so, I mean, that poor girl who didn't, you know, I clearly wasn't raised by the right people, but it does go to show that really just like a personal touch and I think some gratitude goes a long way.
Yeah.
So anyway, I started the internship and much like any new job, you have no idea what your priorities are. It's like everything is coming at you and everything feels like it's a 911 situation, even though I look back and I was like stocking magazines or, you know, putting together tear sheets or whatever. But I was always volunteering for the next job. If there was a meeting with the editor where he's going to come talk to us, like always going to that, arriving early, being on time. So I really worked my tail off. And then it kind of turned into being at the right place at the right time. Obviously that was like back in 2007 and publishing since then has not been the same. And I think I was cheap enough and naive enough and worked my tail off that they were like, that girl looks like she could do it, you know? And so I probably did the job of about four people throughout my time. And I just kept growing in my career there. And so worked my way through the production department, learned all about operations and magazine production. And then over time, as our staff shrunk, kind of evolved into more of an operations role in terms of like the editorial content. And so made my way into the managing editor seat, which was really incredible. It was obviously like a bucket list career moment for me, but it, I can only say that looking back now, because when you're in the thick of it, you're like, oh my gosh, how many people's job am I doing right now? And, you know, it just feels like so much. So as managing editor, I was working across all of our departments. So travel, home style, garden, all of like the feature stories, et cetera. To manage the content that was being created and to help develop editorial calendars for what are we proposing is going to be in each issue, what are our cover options, when are we shooting things, who's writing this, what's our budget, are we within that, please say yes, all of that. And, you know, worked hand in hand with the executive editor there, Chrissy, who is just amazing. She's a longtime journalist and writer and wrangler of all the things. But and we've really kind of built what I felt like I was really proud of. And I'd really just started hitting my stride. It was a weird time because, you know, throughout my time at Southern Living, we went from print focus to we have to lean really heavily on digital. And how are we going to harness digital? And how are we going to evolve the way that we're communicating to our audience, who are very traditional print people? So we introduced the tablet editions, which was, that was an experience. And then we got into licensing deals with partnerships with Dillard's and Ballard's and working with them on what kind of products we want to produce. And that was very cool to kind of always look through the lens or the mind of a Southern woman, which came naturally to me, but also, you know, think about my mom and my grandma and what would they like? And really, it was extremely valuable to be at a brand like Southern Living because people like would write in and say like, oh no, like I have my Bible and then I have my Southern Living. And it's like, in what other industry does that exist?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like we, I think Essence has a really strong brand equity, much like Southern Living, but these are audiences that are extremely passionate about the brand. And so I was really fortunate to be in that, you know, because we saw other sheltered titles like Cottage Living, Rest in Peace, Coastal Living, Rest in Peace. You know, there's other titles that folded, Southern Accents, but the tried and true brands kind of stuck it out. But anyway, so that was kind of my time at Southern Living. It was great. We got into like events where we were doing branded events, partnerships with cities where we were doing editor takeovers, and we would kind of come in and plan a big event in the city and get all of the readers and consumers to come out and join us and pay to be there with editors, which seems weird. You know what I mean? But that kind of all goes back to the brand equity that people just love it so much. And I still look back and think it's pretty incredible.
There's so much to unpack from that, but I think one of the things that stands out big time is the brand equity. And we'll dive into that a little further. And then also your personal path to becoming managing editor. You started in the creative only world, and then managing editor, there's a lot more responsibilities other than just, hey, make it look pretty or, so let's go there first and talk a little bit about that sort of crossover between the creative side, but also kind of the business side, the organizational side. What do you find as sort of the challenge of balancing both of those worlds, and what did you have to learn or how did you learn those things?
Well, it's so interesting because when I started, when I graduated college and started in an internship, my goal was to be an art director and then a creative director. Like, that was my career. That's what I want to do when I grow up. And then I got into the production department, who helps kind of put the files together on the back end, send them to the printer, and make sure that everything turns out the way we want it to be. And kind of help coordinate in a project management way with the designer. So not as much hands-on design, but more post-production. But since I was setting the deadlines for designers, I remember the light bulb moment of being like, I don't want to be the person answering those deadlines and be the person under the gun. Because, oh my God, how can you be creative when you have 3 hours to do it? And like, to this day, that stresses me out, you know?
For sure.
And so I do remember thinking, you know what, like maybe this whole like type A, I'm a Virgo, like maybe this is what I was made to do, to kind of like work in a creative environment and have a freelance gig on the side where I can design whenever I want and kind of under my own deadlines, but in my day job, kind of be more structured and kind of a part of the inner corset of what makes this magazine come out. And so I do remember that moment. And it also made me way more creative outside of work. So in my freelance life, being surrounded by the content that we were creating every day and the kind of designs that we were doing every day, I just was so inspired. You know, it's very difficult not to be inspired around those kind of people. And so I could take that outside of work and do it on my own time, which was great. And then as, my role evolved at Southern Living, it's just, and it's very much apparent in what I do every day here. I have a hard time staying in my lane. And I laugh because I know everybody that's listening to this is agreeing with me if they know me. And it's just, I love being creative and I love spewing ideas, and not in like an, I hope it's not obnoxious way, but in a, like, what if we did this, and kind of being a part of a collaborative brainstorm and discussion. And I've really learned how to harness that and leverage it for growth. So both personally and in my career, for a long time, I would think or hear the ideas being like in a brainstorm outside of what I was doing. And I remember being like, oh, that's like, why wouldn't they do it this way? And just sitting there stewing and rolling my eyes, and then getting an opportunity to sit at the table where you're contributing, and then watching those ideas, the positive reaction to those ideas. And not like everything I say is genius, but the times when it is, it's like, oh, okay, maybe I could do this. And maybe this is a path for me. And so moving towards that, was really empowering. And I think that attributed to my success. But also, one of the things that I learned a whole lot at Southern Living was through managing creative deadlines. So I was trying to get people who didn't report to me. So this is like in the production world, trying to get people who didn't report to me to give me something that I needed in order to make the deadline. Sure. It's like work, ruling with a velvet hammer. It's like trying to herd cats. It's like you have to be nice enough and on their level. And like, as a designer, I totally got what they were going through. And it's like, okay, just tell me, like, so how much time do you think you need? And what if I gave you this day and I turned this around and took this off your plate and then you could focus on this? Like, how would you feel about that? And just coming at people with a sense of empathy and on their level was like a game changer. And I know, I mean, sure. You totally get this.
Sure.
And that's something that a lot of people don't have. And I didn't realize it at the time. It's way easier to see looking back on. But that's been a career differentiator for me.
I think that's crucial. First of all, the self-awareness of understanding how am I performing as a, you know, manager, or even like you said, people that aren't reporting to me, how do I get on their level? How do I make them feel like I get what they're going through, but I still have to get them to do what I need them to do. And I think that's a huge thing to just, when you come across that point where you understand that, and then you can, the psychology that goes into now, how do I manage to that is a big deal. So switching gears now to the brand of Southern Living. Like you said, you went into it thinking we can't just cater to what I like or what I think of as Southern Living, but what is my mom like? What was my grandmother like? And you kind of have to fill the void of all these different demographics, making sure it's strong and on brand, but hits different people who are generational. And so how did you kind of curate that? How did you kind of keep that brand such a strong brand, but also be able to continue to cater to a changing demographic?
That's a great question. And luckily with that kind of audience, they'll let you know when you hit a soft spot. So we, because of advertising, you know, style, the dollars, and still to this day, there is so much money to be had in the beauty market. L'Oreal, Maybelline, I mean, all of the, that's where the ad dollars are. And so we pushed heavily into that market for us. So I was there when we decided to create a style section of the book. You know, Southern Living had always dabbled on style, but it's more like, what do you, you know, back in the 60s, what are you going to wear as you're hosting your guests? Or the perfect hostess outfit, but it never, it was more like about your tablescape and matching your tablescape, or the prep going into it. But it was never a solo kind of section. And so we pushed into that because the ad dollars were there, but also that was a way to instantly reach a younger demographic. So we kind of created columns like, you know, my mom versus me. So how this works for her and how it works for me. And it could be one blouse or tunic and how I'm going to style it and how my mom's going to style it, and kind of bridging the gap. And so that was kind of an interesting way to appeal to a new audience. We lowered the price point a little bit in terms of how we were talking about tablescapes. So maybe it's taking your grandmother's china and using it, you know, her china four ways, and it shows it with a really cool iCat tablecloth, or how you can mix gold and silver, or how use your silver, you know, take the silver that you inherited and here's how to make a really cool tablescape for your derby party. And so just taking what may be seen as traditional and uptight and like, oh, that's so my grandmother's stuff, I don't even know how to like incorporate that into my day to day, and then breaking it down and giving them ideas of how to incorporate it. You know, when people think about their grandmothers and their moms, there's instant, you know, heartstrings being tugged. And so it's like, they want to be able to use that, and they want to be able to like, oh, it does, it reminds me of my grandmother. But like, how can I make it cool? Like, what's my take on this?
Exactly.
And we tried to do that with the style section, but also homes and gardens, and really breaking into one page stories instead of like, here's an elaborate rancher yard that has like incredible landscaping. It's like, let's create a container of the month. And here's the container you should be making, full of like, you know, container pot plants. Like, it can be very easy. So taking this idea of Southern lifestyle and making it more approachable and more realistic to kind of a younger audience was really a big part of what we did. That also came, you know, as the staff kind of turned over and we brought in younger people. There were a lot of people who had been there for 50 years. We celebrated the 50th anniversary while I was there. They hadn't been there the whole time, but like, who had been there, you know, 20, 30 years. And it's like, some fresh blood was great. Obviously those people had brought Southern Living into what it was. And so there's a lot to be said for that, but also kind of evolving and changing. And like I said, it is not all sunshine and roses. People will tell you, like, if you run a story on an art gallery and there happen to be naked statues when that one reader goes to visit, you'll hear about it. Although those naked statues were not there when you did your story, if they are at any point, it's like your Southern Living should not be promoting this. You know what I mean?
It's interesting because, I mean, that shows the power of, yeah, of an established brand.
Yeah.
You know, when you maybe skew outside the lines creatively, yeah, your audience is going to let you know very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
That's not who you are.
Definitely. And it's cool to also, you know, look back at cover trends, and, you know, there's a reason that there's always the white cake in the December issue. Tailgating will always be a September, October feel, pumpkins, you know, like, mm-hmm, you can kind of go through and it's like, oh, there's the White House, because White Houses always perform on the cover. Very they nice. Always perform on Instagram. Like, put a White House on, it will always perform.
So, interesting point. So you were kind of there too when the transition went from published hard copy,
yeah,
to digital,
yeah,
and now this, so recording this in 2020,
yeah,
if you're not digital first, then, yeah, you're behind. But what was that transition like as you were seeing the trends of people not picking up a magazine,
yeah,
as much?
This is so fun to think back on, because it was like when we first decided we were going to launch our social channels, it was like taking what we did in the magazine and just putting it on social. And as you know, that's not how social works. It's like social is a total, I mean, I'm thinking Instagram particularly, it's a totally different content. You know, it's the same brand, but different content approach. And so people want to be inspired by the photos that they see on the Instagram platform, and they don't necessarily want to see the same article that they saw in their issue. And so if you go and look now, I mean, they do an amazing job running the channel now. It's just inspiration after inspiration. But then they kind of like introduce, you know, dog photos or things that like are not in the issue every month, because people love it. And so you kind of, what, they're different audiences. You know, you look at your print audience and it's like, what are they engaging with? And we had a great consumer research department that kind of kept their finger on the pulse of what our readers wanted to see. But then now with social, we can look into the analytics and understand so much more of what our, you know, digital consumers want to read and want to see. And it's not so much link in profile or swipe up for this, but it's just like making sure that the brand, the authentic brand, is on those channels.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting to look back at, because, you know, in the beginning it was like, oh, this editor should just take over the page, whatever. It's like, that doesn't work, you know, and being able to throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks was a huge lesson that I learned at Southern Living. Like, it doesn't have to stay forever.
Right.
Just pivot. Realize when it doesn't work and then move on, yeah, you know. So that was big.
A lot of times people forget there's a difference in social media and digital media, right? Social, you're,
yeah,
actually creating a social environment, something,
yeah,
for people to engage in, something for people to think about and have an experience with, and then move on to the next one and,
yeah,
the next one and the next one. And that's what our social lives are like. We do a thing,
yeah,
and we talk about it, and then we do another thing and we talk about it. It's constantly moving, and,
yeah,
and we're engaging with the new thing. And digital media can be just putting something out there, not,
yeah,
expecting people to completely engage with it in the same way, maybe more informative or whatever. But
right.
I think a lot of brands sometimes forget there's a difference between the two.
Yeah.
And they want their social media to just be digital media. We just need to put this stuff out there.
Right.
And but I think it's interesting from a publication standpoint. You know, you've talked so much about being on brand. And when you think about today in your current role, which we'll transition, mm-hmm, to as a creative services director for an agency, brands should be doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
They should really be a publication of their message,
yeah,
and staying on brand, but also how do I engage that consumer with my social media, with, you know, other forms of media. And so talk about now, as you transitioned out of Southern Living, you know, what did that look like, and where did you think you were going next? Was it another publication that you thought you were going to, or did you think you would end up in the agency world?
Yeah. That's a great question. So my husband was getting his master's when we were in Birmingham in healthcare administration. So we knew that that could mean a career change for him, which I was open to. And, you know, publishing and magazine life is not for the faint of heart. There was so many long hours. So
we've all seen the Devil Wears Prada.
Yes. Yeah. No, really though. And so he got an opportunity. Obviously, I grew up in Nashville, moved to Birmingham for Southern Living. And he got an opportunity here in Nashville while we were living in Birmingham to come and work here in an administrative role. And so it kind of was everything he'd been working towards with his master's program. And so when that, and it was obviously really nice to come back home for me. We had one child at the time, and to be closer to family was a big deal for us. So I left Southern Living, which was really bittersweet. I love the people there. They are still, I mean, I was, I guess, 22 when I started, and I left there when I was 32 and 33. And that's a lot of life and a lot of life change that you go through in one place. And those people are very much still my family. But so I left there and came to Nashville and had what I call my sabbatical because I was unemployed and didn't know. I mean, I was like burnt out from Southern Living. Like I just needed a minute and to try and figure out what in the hell do I do next. Yeah. And so I was doing the networking thing where you go to like 4 coffee meetings a day and then you don't sleep because you've had 4 coffee meetings.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah. At some point. If you haven't,
maybe
then,
still
like,
there from a networking perspective. Yeah.
Right. And so we came back and I started just talking to people and someone introduced me to somebody here at MPNF and I came up and just, I don't know, just to like see what they do, how I could help. You know, I'm like, I could either like, because what do you do with the managing editor? Like, I have all of these skills that you don't realize that you have, especially so soon after you just left. And so anyway, I didn't know what in the world I was going to do. So that's really hard to go into an interview with. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to do?
Which it's such a fascinating just hearing you say that because you were managing editor of a publication that was like people's Bible, you know? And so just the psychology that goes into like,
that's a hard transition. Yeah, self-confidence.
Anyway, go ahead.
And so it's like I knew I didn't want to get back into publishing because people kept trying to push me towards publications here or lifestyle outlets or, you know, and it's like, I don't really, how do you go from Southern Living to like a local magazine or, you know, and like, that's nothing against the local magazine, but I just didn't want, I felt like I would always be comparing it and it's just, their advertisers are different and their bottom line is different. And so I didn't want to do that. And so I started talking to the folks here at MPNF. I remember meeting with all the partners and them saying, you know, like we need someone to run our creative department. And I'm thinking, oh, well, like, yeah, I can totally do that. I mean, that's what I did for 10 years at Southern Living. Not directly overseeing the designers, but I oversaw a ton of creative people. And, oh, my gosh, I could totally do this. And I just felt really confident. But also, I am a people person, and I like business development. And I like, you know, that's another skill that I didn't realize I kind of gained when I was at Southern Living was the ability to sell things, but in an authentic and meaningful way. And so they brought me on as a creative director. So I have a team here of 10 designers, web developers, incredible folks, and very, very creative. And we work with our larger team of account staff and administrative people who we work across all different industries, healthcare, education, nonprofit, I mean, all of the federal programs to kind of create really meaningful content. We also do a lot of crisis comms, media relations, we're a strategic communications agency. So we dabble in a little bit of everything, data, marketing, but I love it here. It's awesome.
And I think there's a lot of parallels that you probably have put together, but just the way I see it is it's almost like every month or every however often you're putting together a magazine. Like there's different sections and each section is like a client and you have work to put out. Each article is different, but you've got to make sure it gets done and manage the people that are getting it done. And there's timelines and deadlines and budgets. And so it sounds like it's kind of the perfect fit, kind of the perfect transition. Get to use all those skills that you developed at such an early age and for such an iconic brand and bring that to your current client base, which is exactly what they need.
Mm-hmm. And I've been at MPNF for 3 years now, and done a lot of reflecting recently because, you know, I started my career, and I mentioned this earlier, wanting to be a creative director. And then I took a totally roundabout way with three knots in it to get to where I am today. And it's kind of a full circle kind of situation. But all of those skills that I learned along the way of bringing new and fresh ideas to the table and always asking questions and always wondering how we can do better, the communication methods that you use with different styles of people, making sure that they feel heard and all of their ideas are good, and how do we work together to bring those to a better place, and then presenting to clients, you know, it's like, it's just like going on a sales trip for Southern Living. It's the same thing, and creating these meaningful relationships with them that that you can then go back to a team of amazing people here and deliver on the work has been incredible. We constantly learning, constantly evolving our skill set and growing as an agency is like, it's all very full circle because it's the same thing over and over, but in a new and better way and like in a more advanced way.
I love it. I think that's such an interesting perspective. So want to run through a few things really quick. What do you see as ways brands are standing out today? What are some of the things brands are doing?
I think that the way that people are getting back to their consumer and like cutting the crap, it's like, just tell people what they want to hear. And you know, you look at Instagram, for instance, there were so many brands that created beautiful content that was perfect and that was, you know, the perfect table setting or the perfect, you know, whatever. And then now people are like, oh, no. Just show them real life. People want to see real life. They want to see people that they identify with. And I love that. I think it is so much more approachable. It is like, it resonates with people so much better. So I'm thrilled that that's kind of becoming a thing again. I think that, you know, it's interesting to see the pendulum of digital. You know, it's like we become so addicted to our devices. It's like, so what happens when we swing the other way? And I hope that we keep swinging the other way and taking some time away from our devices, because I'm like very much guilty of all of that. But you know, the ability to like, you go to weddings now and it's like, oh, drop your phone at the door. Or you go to a restaurant, there's certain restaurants who are like, we're a no cell phone zone, you know, like put your phone down and enjoy each other's company. I love that. And I hope that we kind of continue to swing that way, which is cool.
Yeah, I talk all the time about the idea of human-to-human connection and how, regardless of how we get there, that has to be the paramount piece of our digital interactions. It needs to drive us to have a human-to-human interaction. Yeah. If we don't use this platform to get face-to-face or even, you know, digital-to-digital, but where there's a human connection, then what are we doing? You know, that's where, I mean, we see people struggling with depression all the time because they're just, they think this is everything. And it's just amazing that still has to be kind of embedded in people's mindset.
Yeah. It's very much in our core of like, we need that interaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You talked a lot about teams and the teams you manage. Talk a little bit about, just sort of the importance of teamwork in order to create a successful product.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, they're just, without teamwork, it's not a successful product, period. And I think that we as an agency have grown so much in terms of the way that we're pulling people into projects. It's like we're pulling creative people in on the very beginning in the pitch, because it's like we're just bringing fresh ideas in. People who have not worked with the client for 5 years and they're coming in with like, well, have you ever thought about this? You know, and chances are they haven't thought about that. But it's not just about bringing creative people in. It's like about creative people bringing account staff in too. So it goes two ways. And sometimes I've found that that's the Venn diagram of perfection, is when you have a meeting of the minds and really can collaborate together. I feel like I use the word collaborate ad nauseum. It's just annoying, but it's like, that's where the magic happens. It's never going to be my idea. It's never going to be your idea, but together we'll come up with the really good idea. And, you know, we have a great work from home policy here, which is awesome. But sometimes it can be really hard to collaborate and feel the energy of a brainstorm and create your best work when, like, you've got all these different remote teams. And that's not to say that, I mean, we do really great Zoom, we use Zoom and all of the digital tools. But sometimes there's just a lot to be said about getting together in person and sketching it out on the whiteboard or even ripping the paper apart and starting over together. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
Just through social media that you guys put out, it seems like y'all really push collaborating with teams and getting out and doing things. And I think that's huge. I think not enough people put emphasis into that. And I know there's a lot of brands out there, companies, agencies, that think, well, it's too expensive to do, whatever. But it doesn't have to be monumentally expensive. It can cost $50 for some pizza or, you know, whatever. Or free, just take some LaCroix, some bottled water, just go out and get out and do things together, and that really kind of solidifies that team mentality.
Yeah.
Who are some of your heroes, titans, as I like to call them?
Oh, gosh. Oh, you should have told me about that question.
Take your time. Think about it.
Dina Ivey at the CBC, I don't know if you worked with her recently, but she is probably my mentor. If I had to pick one, she has no idea. So that's that. But she is such a badass marketing genius. And I mean, she runs a tight ship. She is incredibly creative, but also has that balance of get it done. And she will do whatever it takes to do it right and do it really well. And there is no other, that well is the standard. Like, you do it right. And so, and she meets it every single time. And Butch, over there, I mean, they just run an incredible show, but she also is an incredible mom and wife. And so the way that she manages her family and her son, who boy mom, I really admire that, and her ability to still find time to grab lunch or coffee or a drink after work, or and still prioritize her marriage and her personal life and her children but still be a badass in her career is very inspiring to me. So
I love it. All right, a few rapid fire questions.
All right, let's do it.
These are the fun ones. Best book or latest book that you've read?
Oh my gosh.
Or magazine for that matter.
There we go. Veranda. I'm really into Veranda right now. I did read a really good book. I think it was called Behind Closed Doors. And it was so creepy. I read it a couple months ago, and it was a really good, like, suspenseful book. Other than that, magazine junkie over here, Country Living is actually doing amazing things. They have totally re-energized the brand, and so it's really cool if you ever read Country Living, which I don't know if that's really up your alley, but then and now to kind of look at the way the brand has evolved is really cool. Gardening Gun, obviously Southern Living, would be remiss if I didn't say that. But yeah, definitely a magazine junkie, also podcast junkie and all of that.
What's your favorite podcast?
Well, so I get down deep into, industry podcasts. I really like, That's Probably an Ad by Adweek. David Greiner, it kind of runs their podcast, and he does a really good job of not being annoying and really delivering content that is that resonates with me, but also with, I think, everyday Joe Schmo. It's just kind of like what's happening in the agency world, but then also, you know, dissecting the Super Bowl ads or what's AI and how is it affecting our dating relationships or, you know, stuff like that. He's good.
Podcast hosts have a tendency of being really creative, so it's good.
Yeah.
And also annoying. But
yeah.
It's good that he's not annoying.
I mean, it's a fine line of like, I can't listen to this no matter what the content is. If they don't deliver it well, I just can't. So.
Yeah. Daily routine. What's the one thing you have to do every day?
I mean, I definitely have to have coffee.
Are you like a first thing out of bed coffee drinker or when you get to the office?
Yeah, no, definitely first thing. I've been trying to drink lemon water first thing, which it does wake you up for like, it's like, oh, wow, that's tart.
So it is a cold shower, but you know, it's not for everybody.
Cold shower works too. Definitely coffee. And then my husband and I both get up very early and kind of get our day started. That's like kind of our thing, and we kind of go into different parts of the house, and it's just we wake up and have quiet time before the boys wake up, and that's definitely starts my day off right. I don't like being woken up by them because then I don't have like any time to kind of think before we get started.
So are you a 5 a.m. wake up call?
Yeah, it's like 4:45. Yeah. But really, like, I am a morning person. I've learned that about myself. And like at night around 8 p.m., like my brain is shutting down. And so, but in the morning, I feel so energized and I have the most creative ideas and I'm just like on go mode. So
love that. Best piece of advice you've ever received or given?
That's probably to give it time. Somebody told me that let it be organic and it doesn't have to be like, don't overthink it. You know, I think that when we think about our career paths, it feels like you need very tangible milestones along the way. And even just reflecting on what we've talked about today, it's like nothing was tangible or milestone like in my career. And so why do I feel like the next phase or whatever is ahead has to be tangible and milestone driven? So just don't overthink it and let it happen, you know. And I think when we work hard enough, it will, and when we have the right mindset, it will happen. So
I think that's a great one for me is the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's true for so many people.
Yeah.
You put in the work and all of a sudden all this luck starts happening. And you're like, wow, I didn't expect that, but
is it hard work or is it luck?
Exactly. If you could write a book or a magazine, what would you title it?
I did just write a little book for this retreat. It's like not really a book, but like I put together this quote unquote book. And Everything You Never Knew You Needed to Know. And it's just like about life hacks. And it was really fun to write. And we just had our fall retreat and we all kind of hosted workshops on like teaching our fellow staffers and team members skills that you have that you may want to share. And I was like, what do I know? I know a lot of really random things, like, you know, like how to get stains out or like, you know, the best pillowcase to buy or the
things perfect that would appear in the pages of
a magazine. Yes. And so I have a lot of hacks like that. So that'd probably be what
this.
I did. Yeah.
Do I get a copy?
I could get you a copy. Okay. I know somebody.
And then, yeah, I think just to wrap it up, what is your favorite, artist or creator, you know, when it comes down to inspiration?
Yeah, that is a really great question. Charlotte Terrell is who I'm digging her artwork. It's real ethereal landscape. She used to be a landscape architect, and so she's transformed that into a second career as an artist and a painter, and her work is stunning. It is like puts you in all the right moods. It's just very chill and masculine, feminine, but just, like I said, very peaceful. And so I'm channeling her. It's also like old world meets new world. It's beautiful. So she's probably the artist that I'm most into right now. I, of course, dabble in calligraphy. And so there's just some incredible artists, you know, in that world. And then Amanda Norman is a local watercolor artist here in Nashville that I'm really into trying to convince my husband to let me splurge on a few things. So if you're listening, Evan, we should go ahead and pull the trigger on those.
Now's the time.
Right, yeah.
Well, Mary Elizabeth, this has been fantastic. I appreciate you taking the time. You are a true titan of creative, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Let's do this again.
Absolutely.
If you liked this episode of Titans of Industry, head to contenttitan.co/podcast for more episodes or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And if you know of an industry titan that's doing amazing things, let us know on social media or through our website so we can tell their story. Thanks for listening.